Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
I'm Arthur.
And we are doing things backwards, but it's fine.
Backwards?
Well, because we already put out the second film that we watched at Fantasia,
yes.
Our review for the second movie. Technically, what we're talking about today is the first movie that we watched.
Yes, and the movie was Her Private Hell, and we needed to sit on it.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that you don't fully get once you've left the theater.
Yeah. So, okay. Apparently we're jumping right in. So, Her Private Hell was the opening film of the festival
this
year.
The Fantasia Festival.
Correct. Which, that's it. We are currently covering. Follow us on socials at Grave Tone Pod, and you will see all of the things that we have coming out about that as well.
Yeah, there's also a whole section on the website, so.
Yeah.
Bam. There you go. It is their 30th edition.
Correct. So
30
it's
years.
The big year.
It's crazy.
For them.
Yeah.
Big year, huge year. It's crazy. And they've definitely pulled some, I'd say, an interesting selection, but also some interesting people.
Oh, yeah.
Coming to
the
festival this
year. Like,
they're
premiering the last episode of Cape Fear.
Correct.
And
Patrick Wilson
is going to be there, which is amazing.
Okay, I think I need to set the scene. Patrick Wilson is going to be there for the finale, the season finale of Cape Fear.
Yeah.
On the same day that Vera Farmiga will be there for the premiere of The Leader.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't use that as an opportunity for a reunion, I will be sorely disappointed.
I know, right? Come on.
And I think that might be a double feature day for me, if I'm
Do
honest.
Do it.
Yeah, honestly.
Do it, man,
yeah.
For sure. There's also Freaks 2.
Freaks Part 2,
which is really cool.
I had no idea until that was announced that this was something that was in the works, and this is so interesting. We saw Freaks Part 1
mm-hmm.
at the festival the year that it came out, I think 2018.
And it's great.
Or something.
It's
we really enjoyed
good,
it. Yeah, no, it was a good film, so I'm really looking forward to see kind of like what they've done with the second part.
Yeah.
Very cool. Anyway, sorry. So, back on track. We are talking about Her Private Hell today. So this is the latest film from Nicholas, I think it's Winding Refn,
mm-hmm.
who's a Danish filmmaker who, I mean, if you're not like familiar with the name, I can kind of understand that, but he is definitely someone whose films you've probably seen.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Particularly Drive from 2011 with Ryan Gosling and Carey Mulligan in it. That was a huge film when
that
came out. Yeah, it was, I'd have to watch it again.
Mm.
The lack of talking. That Ryan Gosling went through this phase in the 2010s where he was like the strong silent type in every movie, and I was like, okay, you can do something else, which is probably why he did Barbie, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to kind of break out of that. So the film, as I mentioned, is directed by Refn. This is his first film in a decade, actually.
Yeah, where he's like solely the director.
Correct.
He's done some other things like shorts and co-directing
yes.
and whatever,
yes.
but yeah.
And he co-wrote the screenplay
mm-hmm.
as well for this.
Mm-hmm.
He directed it, produced it, and co-wrote the screenplay. His latest film after That's It, Neon Demon, which came out back in 2016,
yep.
if I'm not mistaken. And so that's interesting. And I mean, I haven't seen Neon Demon. I've heard people overall like it. Like, it's
okay.
an interesting film. And I do love Elle Fanning, so I'm probably going to get around to watching that at some point, too.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's really cool. We also stayed for the Q&A afterwards, because like
did.
I said, we did not understand much from this movie in
terms
of what it meant.
I mean,
not right away.
I think
okay, well, I didn't.
Got it.
You did. It's true, you did, because I was asking you questions like, what the fuck did I just watch? But we did stay for the Q&A afterwards, and he gave us a couple of very interesting tidbits of information, I guess, of kind of where the movie came from and things about himself. So if you don't know, I was absolutely fascinated. We're going to mention that.
I think he might be much more fascinating than this film was, if
yes.
I'm honest, as a person. He also seemed very funny and charming, and I'd kind of like to just, like, have a beer with him. You
know, I know
what I mean?
Right?
He gave that vibe.
Yeah. It was very interesting, because this movie, anyways, what is this about? And I'm going to try to
salt
in and sprinkle in some of the stuff that he said.
So, okay, let me read the IMDb synopsis, because whoever
at IMDb synopsis also doesn't know what it's about.
No, whoever at IMDb got this one and had to write a synopsis for it was like, shit, it's one sentence. So let me just read it.
Mm-hmm.
A hypnotic, unhinged thriller with an original story promising plenty of glamour, sex, and violence.
Yeah, that's just adjectives.
Yep. What adjectives would you use to describe this movie? Our friends at Drawn to Darkness do this for every single episode that they have.
Yeah.
Whatever topic they're covering, piece of media, whatever it is, they use, like, what adjective would you use to describe
this? Yeah, yeah.
But this is people doing it in, like, the shittiest way possible.
Right.
Theirs
it's
is good. Theirs
IMDb.
Is fun. And we're going to have an upcoming episode probably in August that's a new childhood trauma with them, which is so fun because it's the first time we've ever covered, like, quote-unquote kids' films.
Yes.
For childhood trauma. And I'm really excited to see how this goes because it was a funny conversation. So that's it. That is the only kind of description that you get. And it just goes to show that most people don't really understand this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand why. Because I have theories about what the movie's about, but I definitely don't know if I'm right.
Right.
Even a few days later.
Yeah, that's it. So.
So the film stars, let me go through things really quickly, because it does have a really great cast, oh, yeah. I will say.
So just the cast is amazing. And they do a fucking great job.
Fucking fantastic. So the main cast consists of Sophie Thatcher, who plays Elle, who is, I think, very rapidly become a modern day screen queen. She's fantastic. She's always good at everything. I love her. Charles Melton, who plays Private K, currently in the latest season of Beef on Netflix.
Cool.
And also, I just laugh more about this because I know him from Riverdale as Reggie. Havana Rose Liu, who plays the character of Dominique. Great. Also very good. Best comedic timing in the entire film.
Yes.
She was very funny. Christine Frosseth, I think it is, who plays the character of Hunter, also very funny in a totally different way. The third person.
God, it's true.
Yeah. DeGray Scott, who plays Johnny Thunders. It took me a hot minute to recognize him, but if you grew up in the 90s and you watched Ever After as much as I did, you're like, oh, hey, that's Prince Charming from Ever After, the dad.
Yeah.
As well as, I mean, there's like a few other people in there too, but this is kind of like our main cast of characters that we have throughout the course of the film. So, very, very broad strokes, I guess. The plot-wise, the film follows the character of Elle, played by Sophie Thatcher. It's sort of two different stories happening at the same time consecutively. So Elle's character is a model/actress and is one of these people who's like very rich and very privileged, is about to start filming a movie. I believe her father, I guess, runs a production company.
I think so.
See, even unclear. That's not clear. Unclear, whatever. And it kind of doesn't matter if we're honest. And we follow the kind of process to a degree of sort of her working on the film, but also mostly tackling the way that women are kind of treated as objects in the entertainment industry as a whole and how they are largely discarded and how different women kind of navigate that in a different way. And you have different versions of women throughout the course of the film. Elle's character, who's very tired of dealing with the kind of crap that they have to deal with in the industry, and then you have a new ingenue up-and-comer like Hunter, who is extremely excited regardless of what's going on and wants to be like part of all the action even if she's being degraded, basically. And then there's a lot of other strange juxtapositions with other characters that are interacting with Elle at the same time. And while all of this is happening, we basically have what in my opinion is like a second movie.
Movie within a movie?
Kind of.
Inception?
Which follows the character of Private K, who is played by Charles Melton, who is trying to find the answers about his daughter, who went missing a number of years prior, because there is a sort of backstory that exists within this universe in which there is allegedly some sort of serial killer who is hunting down young women in the area, and his daughter appears to be one of the girls who was taken by this mysterious scary figure, essentially
the Leather Man. Yeah.
What a gross name. I hate that. So that's very base level, where I'm not going to do anything else right now because we'll get into the spoilery bit after. But also, I feel like this one you almost have to set up. I almost have to tell you this much before we get to that part, because if not, you're kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If not, yeah, there's a lot going on. There's like a father-daughter subplot in both of those movies at the same time. There's a lot of things in there. Part of the reason of why Nicholas made this movie is that he was telling us at the Q&A is that apparently before he made this, he died for 12 minutes. 25 minutes, yes, thank you.
In 2023, he's just stated, and I don't believe that there are any real details, but he has stated that he was technically dead for 25 minutes and was, I mean, he says brought back to life with electricity, so I can only assume shocked.
Yeah, obviously.
And then it kind of reignited, I guess, because he wasn't making films very much anymore, and it seems to have reignited his creativity and a lot of the thought process behind much of what he was making. And so there are many themes in this film to do with reimagining oneself, rebirth, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I believe that that, for him, seems to come from a very personal place due to his experience. So, okay, give me your first thoughts about things for you, because there's just like there's a lot about this that we need to maybe get into slightly more in detail afterwards. Mm-hmm. But first thoughts and digs, where are you at with this right now, now that we've had some time to think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still on the whole situation of not fully understanding what it was about.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing it one way, and that is completely valid. I did not see it that way at all, but I still don't really know kind of like what is the plot that kind of ties everything together. Yeah. So it's disjointed a little bit for me, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. I like the movie in general because it is absolutely beautiful to watch.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, like, yes, the cast is great and everything. And after we stayed for the Q&A, the couple of things that he mentioned, I also, like, it made me like that movie a little bit more, you know? But because I didn't really fully understand it, it's hard for me to, you know, kind of rate it high enough.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I think at the current festivals and when it was in Cannes, it's not really doing that well.
No, a lot of people were, there were talks about people walking out because they were bored, is what I was seeing.
I wouldn't say that the movie is boring, because when I was watching, I wasn't necessarily bored because I was trying to understand what the hell is happening.
Yeah, that's
so fair. My brain was working to be like, okay, how is this tie in and who is this guy and what is he doing here? Why? And everything, you know? So I wasn't bored per se, but I didn't really get it. Let's put it that way. So I'm like a, I don't know, 3 out of 10.
Sure.
Fair. Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like I like Drive. Yeah, you know, that one made a lot more sense to me and everything.
Well, it's much more linear.
Yeah, but this one, I just didn't get it. Maybe it's just not for me.
That's okay. Mm. That's fine. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I think it's okay to just, like, not understand something and be okay with that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that I think everyone has their own interpretation of it.
I think so.
That's just what it is.
Yeah, even including, I'm sure it's different between different cast members and the director himself, I'm sure, have different interpretations and their own different thoughts about it. So
that's it.
I feel like I'm probably roughly sitting in the same camp. We've been on the same spot like quite often.
I know.
More recently.
God, are we the same person?
Maybe. Oh, it's only been a year. God. Anyway, I think that, God, this movie's stunning to watch. There's so there's so many beautiful things going on in it, like beautiful camera work, color palette, beautiful people, obviously.
Oh, I love the color palette thing.
Stunning.
Why? Oh. It is the case because he can see green.
Yeah, so
that he learned about that when he was like 24 years old or something like that.
Yeah, so apparently the director is colorblind, and there are like specific midtones that he apparently can't see very well, and he can't see the color green.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that came up, and so you do notice throughout the course of the film, nothing's lit in green. There is no green.
No, there is no green. But he also said to the DP and whatever, he was like, because he was asking, like, well, you know, what kind of color palette do you want? How do you want the lighting? Whatever it is. And he was like, I don't know, make it pop. I want to have a lot of pink. I want to have a lot of red. I want to have a lot of oranges and stuff, right? Because I think that's the color they can probably see the most, but he can't see green. So, yeah, there's no green, but it is beautifully lit.
Stunning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great color palette. Stunning. That's it. A lot of really interesting, like, the set design, a lot of it's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's got, like, a dark Jetsons kind of vibe. It's weird because it's like part sci-fi, so it's really strange.
It's kind of like neo sci-fi type of thing.
It could be the Jetsons, it could be Blade Runner, it could be all of these things kind of mishmashed together. It's very heavy on the melodrama, which does play well some of the time, maybe not as much, but it's got like a lot of that aspect to it as well, which is interesting. And the actors, I think, were fully committed to it, which I think drove things forward probably better than it would have been if they weren't, which was good. It's got surprisingly fantastic action sequences to it, which I wasn't expecting. I didn't know that was going to happen.
That was very well done.
But they were really well done. They looked great. And that's it. Performances, the score is also fantastic in the film.
Oh, yeah, because he got the guy who did the... he's like an opera...
Yeah, Pino Donaggio.
That's it.
Giuseppe Pino Donaggio. He is an extremely famous composer of film and TV scores.
Who was in retirement, apparently, or basically retired.
Well, so he frequently has collaborated with Brian De Palma in film, so that's like a big one. Mm-hmm. That's one that comes back, and apparently they tried to get him here for the premiere of the film at the festival, and the reason that he's not here is because he's currently scoring the next Brian De Palma film.
Nice.
And he's working on it as we speak, so apparently that's something that's happening, which is really interesting. But yes, he is extremely renowned and does a beautiful job with the score, and the score perfectly matches the tone, I will say, at pretty much any given time that it's on, which is very cool.
Well, the director said that, like, he initially had he came to him for the score even before the movie was fully done, or even I think started filming, because usually you add that at the end.
Yeah.
But here he said, like, the score is going to be what hinges on the movie.
Yeah.
So, like, what you compose, I'm going to make it fit to the movie, mm-hmm. not the other way around. Yeah. Which is very interesting.
It was interesting, for sure. So, yeah. But all of that said, I do feel that this movie has some really severe pacing issues. Mm. I would argue that the first half, if not the first two-thirds of the film, are extremely slow-moving and don't, you know, do a ton. And I would argue that the differences between, or I guess the juxtaposition of the L storyline and the Private K storyline don't fit very seamlessly and almost feel like they should have been two separate films that maybe just exist in the same world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that might have played better.
Or maybe they should have crossed somehow better somewhere. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that might have been a better idea. So, yeah. So with that, there were a lot of, like, interesting things about it. I think I'm sitting at about, like, a 3.5.
Right, that's it.
It's kind of where I am, because there was a lot of stuff. And I'm going to touch on it a little bit after, but there was some kind of stuff that I feel was almost fetishized in a way that I did not enjoy mm-hmm. in this movie at all, to do with particular relationships between characters, and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we get into a little bit more of a spoilery territory so we can actually do some favorites and do some stuff?
Yeah, that's it. As always, as you know, it's not full-on spoilers. We're not going to break down every single beat, but we are going to talk about some more, I guess, deeper plot points and expand on it a little bit.
Yeah. So just be aware of that. And also be aware that the film is getting a theatrical release on July 24th.
Yeah, so it's coming out very soon.
This coming Friday. Anyways. That's it when you're hearing this. It's literally this week. Mm-hmm. So just be aware of that too. Anyway, hopefully you guys are enjoying our coverage so far. If you are, please feel free to rate and review us. It really helps us get the episodes out in front of more people, and we really, really, really appreciate it. Gary, our resident ghoul, is digging a grave in your honor. Gary, please get over here and do the fucking spoiler warning.
You've been warned. Spoilers ahead.
Right, so I guess you know what? I don't even know if I can necessarily get into, like, any kind of more detailed plot, because it's very bizarre and there's kind of too much going on and not enough at the same time. Oh, I think that might be what my problem is with it. But anyway,
like, okay, we'll say what it is, but I don't think it's gonna make a lot of sense if you're listening to it.
No.
So, like, essentially it starts with Elle, right?
Yes,
who's like the main character, Sophie Thatcher's character. She's coming back, and her co-star, I guess,
Hunter
is appearing, or has appeared, in the lobby of this incredibly beautiful giant-ass building.
Yeah.
Right? And she's like, oh, that's my luggage. Anyway, she takes her in, mm-hmm. into this apartment. Mm-hmm. There's also her stepmom.
Dominique,
who plays there, who's basically the same age as her.
Yes.
You know, because the dad remarried someone who's essentially 4 years older than her, I guess,
or something
like that. The dad's
a giant
walking
cliche.
Yeah, that's it. Because, you know, he's, like, super rich and very feared from what we are given to understand. They're trying to repair their relationship because I guess it was good before, mm-hmm. but we don't know. And the dad basically thinks that, you know, working on this movie together, and by also him leaving somewhere, it will make it better for them to reconnect.
Yeah.
And then
I guess some of this is supposed to be, to do with the fact that that this relationship is broken between father and daughter, and in spite of, and it basically dad in his way is trying to fix things, but it's just by slapping a band-aid on something that doesn't work. And as soon as it maybe starts to show that she's still not going to be okay with it and he'd have to work harder, he's like, never mind, I'm gonna go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that happening, and then there's another thing with the Leatherman.
Yes. So this is happening at the same time, and this is where things get weird. There are rumors about some masked killer in the area who is slowly but surely kidnapping, picking off young women, essentially. But it seems like it's women and girls.
Yes.
And this is partially where we get, obviously, there's, like, you know, a fear factor of it. This kind of almost plays in a way, and I don't know if this is true, but this is it. My theory coming out of this was that the Leatherman, because he's sort of faceless to a degree, is meant to represent, like, the industry as a whole and, like, people within the entertainment industry and how they just, like, swallow women up and spit them back out again, basically, or they just swallow them up and they're never the same again, or they disappear because they almost have to become a different person to be successful. I don't know. Listen, there were there's nothing, the problem with something like this is that I'm okay with some ambiguity and some level of interpretation in a film, but when the entire thing is you being like, what? Every like 30 seconds and being like, oh fuck, what does this one mean now? And when you leave with actually no real answers to questions,
yeah, that's it.
I get annoyed with that. I feel like I can't have that much ambiguity in a film. It's too much.
Yeah, that's it. It's too much because you leave and you kind of like, I'm not sure what happened because I don't get it.
No.
And that is not great because it makes you enjoy the movie less.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Yes. And there are just aspects that I should have liked more that I didn't. And then, like we mentioned, there's also the parallel storyline happening with Private K, a soldier played by Charles Melton, who is searching for his daughter or answers to what happened to his daughter.
Who was technically taken by the Leatherman.
Correct, yes. Or at least we're led to believe.
From what we're given to understand.
Correct, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so he's searching for that, and there's like, you know, a police involvement and mafia, Yakuza involvement in this and whatever.
Because they're in Japan, sort of. Neo-Tokyo type of vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. You're right. So, yeah, there's all that going on. And here we are. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. That was, like, so that was good.
We are here. We are experiencing these things. We are seeing these very beautiful scenes, like I said.
Correct.
The director apparently filmed it in sequence, which is extremely rare.
Yeah, apparently he does that all for all of his films because he literally said, he was like, I get confused otherwise.
Yeah, that's it.
Which I was like, that's very honest and I really appreciate that.
I get it, yeah.
I feel like I would be the same. I'm always like, how do you film like random scenes when you're making a movie? I've never attempted to do anything like this.
You have no choice. If you're different locations, you got to take a location, film everything in there.
Yeah.
It could be the beginning, could be at the end, could be the middle.
That's
and then
true.
You move to a different location because I don't know, it's going to cost fucking astronomical amounts of money.
No,
you know?
I know. I agree. And I'm sure depending on what type of film we're talking about.
That's
I guess
it.
Maybe if I'm thinking about something where like this, where it's like you're mostly in like quote unquote singular location.
You're probably
or
in
on
a stage.
Sets,
yeah,
like
that's it.
You're in a... stuff like that. Or you're in like a singular location type of story setup or whatever. I could see that working and probably just filming in sequence at that point.
That's it.
Yeah.
So there's like things going on, and then there's also, because apparently what he mentioned during the Q&A is that in the middle of filming, he decided that the stepmom and the character of Elle are going to have some kind of weird sapphic kind of moment or relationship or whatever it is, which kind of also almost comes out of nowhere.
It shows that this was shoehorned in.
Yeah, that's it.
So yes, the general storyline is that Elle and Dominique were best friends, but Dominique wound up kind of worming her way in and marrying Johnny, who
is
Elle's
what it
father.
Was?
Yeah, and that's what like
had,
that's
I,
what happened.
I had no
she
idea they
in,
were best friends.
Yeah, they were best friends. And
what
she,
the fuck?
Like,
see what I mean?
Yeah.
I just learned that now.
So they were good friends, and then she like wormed her way in and wound up marrying Johnny when he whatever decided to propose to her, et cetera, et cetera. Fine. But and I guess that was always what the original storyline was. But then yes, apparently halfway through production, Nicholas Winding Refn was suddenly like, do you know what? I think that this will play even better if it turns out that on top of being best friends, Elle and Dominique were lovers. And it's so funny.
But just for a bit.
Yeah. And it's so funny because when he was answering all of this within like the Q&A portion of the evening, and it did play as a joke, but when you think about it, I'm like, ah, because he says this and then mentions that Havana Rose Liu, who plays Dominique in the film, when he said that, she was like, oh. And I'm like, see, a woman would have that kind of reaction and be like, I'm sorry, what?
We've been doing this
entirely differently like this whole fucking time, and now we're just going to kind of like shoehorn some stuff in. So basically he added it in the middle of production, and I'm sorry, but it shows.
Well, yeah, it does show, because also remember we just said that he filmed all of this in sequence.
Yes.
So all the sequences before this being added in, there is absolutely not a kindling of interest between each of them.
Not at all.
You know what I mean?
Like, there's tension, but the tension is to do with, like, the we were friends and now we're not because we have this weird fucking relationship because now you're now my stepmom, which is bizarre. Like, it plays more like that.
That's it.
And then it suddenly, and now we're halfway through the film and they're suddenly, like, quote-unquote secret lesbians.
Right.
And it bothers me because the way that it feels shoehorned into the story is annoying. And two, because of that... and also because of a lot of the physical aspects of it, when they do kind of like come together, it feels very fetishy. it's fucking weird, and it kind of feels like a man just wanted a lesbian storyline in his movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ooh, I don't like that. Oh, I don't like it. It's icky.
I don't know.
It's weird.
I don't know. It's yeah, it's very strange. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I also just, an idea popped just in my head
yes.
right now about the whole industry thing, that this is what it represents. Mm-hmm. So in order to kill the Leatherman,
yes.
who's going around and, you know, killing these actresses and people and girls, whatever yeah. it is, the only way to do that is to cut off his hands.
Correct.
On which he's wearing, like, diamond gloves.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
This literally just popped in my head, that you cannot kill it by literally killing
by stabbing or him replacing or
the person, whatever it is. Yeah. You have to put that person in jail, therefore cut off the hands.
Yes, so that he can't touch anyone anymore.
It just went into my head.
Yeah.
So I think what you're saying actually makes a lot of sense.
I think
that
so.
I don't know if that's the right interpretation, but God. It's the one that makes the most sense to me now.
I have no fucking idea. Listen, maybe it is, maybe it's not. We were having we had a pretty lengthy conversation, which was rare for us, in the car on the way home with our friend Raph from Stabbed and Bothered.
That's it.
Because all three of us were like a little bit flabbergasted by this whole film.
Yep.
So,
and we're all trying to understand.
Definitely, it. Yeah. He also made a video about it because he makes a lot of short form content. Yes. Go check that out too, because he also mentions a couple of specific things. But yeah, it was just, it was a weird experience. But the lesbian thing fucking bothered me. That really bugged me. I thought it was annoying and stupid.
I liked the storyline of, what's his face?
Private K. Yes.
Yeah, his storyline was pretty cool because, you know, it's the whole thing of, you know, the leather man well, comes felt, where the fog is.
It was in, like a film noir almost.
It was, that's it, very much film
very
noir.
Neo-noir.
He also stood out in terms of as a character design.
I agree.
From what was generally happening, because yeah. he had very much like an old army uniform.
Very World War II era.
Yeah, but he's also like 30 years old, basically, correct. By yeah. the way that he looks and everything.
Yeah.
But the setting of the whole thing is a little bit more futuristic.
Yes.
I think.
Charles Hulton's 35 years old.
Wow. That's what I'm saying. So, like, all that was interesting, yeah. juxtaposition, what he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. He had that whole little, I don't know, I don't want to say John Wick thing, but, you know, he kind of basically goes around and kills gangsters who are trying to take advantage of women.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It does have, it almost has a little era, like an era yeah. of kind of thing kind of sprinkled in there too, which, yeah, it's cool. Like I said, he's the reason that there are a lot of action sequences in the film, and they look phenomenal. Genuinely, they look great. Like the yeah. fight sequences are cool. And I agree. I think his storyline is also quite compelling. I just don't think that these two storylines, they're kind of both interesting on their own, but they don't fit in the same movie, because it feels like you've just shoved too much shit into one film.
I feel like it's because they had to do something with the whole Leatherman thing. And
yes.
if it wasn't for Ellie's character trying to go about finding him or understanding yeah. it more, I guess
they never would have come into contact.
Person.
They never would have come into contact. So again, you're yeah. kind of like, you just forced this to happen, and it felt that way, I
yeah.
guess, going
I don't
in.
Know.
Okay. Shall we rapid, let's just rapid fire through.
Well, yeah, because we kind of broke the format. Like,
sorry.
This movie broke my mind.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's hard. I feel like we needed to dissect it in a different way. We also waited to record, which we never do.
Yeah,
so
seriously.
Just, yeah, let's rapid fire three favorites, mm-hmm. shall we? Just bam.
They might be very similar.
Probably.
Color palette is absolutely stunning. I would rewatch it again just for that. Seriously,
yes.
if you love his movies, you should definitely watch it on a big screen, because it's amazing.
Oh, there's
right.
Oh, it's beautiful. It is a beautiful film to
yeah.
watch.
It is absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I think the character design for everyone was very cool.
Yes.
Those two assistants
yes.
that were there, they were so fucking weird. I love them so much.
I know, they were really cuckoo.
They were very yeah. cuckoo bananas, as
yeah.
you say.
Cuckoo nuts bananas.
There you go. But they're also funny.
Yes.
Anyways, that's like I said, that's it. The character design is strange.
Yes.
But my kind of strange,
mm-hmm.
I guess, if you want to put it that way.
Yes.
And, I mean, look, yeah, the score is great. You know, it pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Okay, so, yes, I think my three are probably the overall performances from basically everyone. I thought everyone was
yeah.
phenomenal. Standouts for me are probably Christine Frosseth, because she was
Hunter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was so fucking funny.
She was so fucking hilarious.
She, like, it was, it was just the funniest version of sort of like the dumb blonde, like ditzy character you've seen in a while. It was very funny and very honest in its portrayal. I really appreciated it, and it led to a lot of really great comedic beats throughout the film, which I loved, which I think that leads me into my second favorite. The comedic timing in this film is excellent, whether it's through dialogue or through just kind of awkward moments between characters, but it was purposeful. It never felt like it was not supposed to be there or I wasn't supposed to laugh. It definitely felt like I was supposed to laugh at it. Yeah, and I did. And I really appreciated that. I thought that was great. And then as a final, I think third one probably in sort of the same realm as like your character design is going to be the costumes. Like the fashion was really good in this. I loved the way everybody was dressed. I thought everybody looked really cool because it has this really great old, like the whole way that the story plays out is like a very old school film noir melodrama.
Yeah.
But the fashion in the film is very almost like neo-futuristic kind of thing. And it was really interesting. It's and very I loved contemporary that. The costumes, stuff, the makeup, all of that stuff. I thought that was so interesting and fascinating to watch. So I guess at the end of the day, it's weird because we're giving these this really low ratings because from like a story perspective and stuff like that, we were not big fans of this. But from the perspective of the visuals and a lot of the different elements of it, it's kind of worth watching anyway. Like, I'd be curious to know what other people's opinions are, maybe who kind of see this after the film is released and maybe a wider audience has access to it. I'd be really curious to know, like, if you guys who are listening have thoughts about it and stuff, what you did or didn't like about it, if you're kind of like on the same wavelength, maybe you understood it a different way that makes more fucking sense.
Yeah, please explain to us.
Jesus. Seriously. And that's fine if we're just like the idiots who can't figure it out. But, you know.
Guess we're stupid. I don't know.
Whatever. I don't care. But yeah, it was a really interesting film, and I can't say that I loved it because there was a lot not to love, but I also can't say that I hated it. No. It was the worst piece of garbage I've seen in my life. That's untrue. It's too beautiful and has too many great performances for me to say that. Yeah. There's no fucking way.
Regardless of the story, I think the way that he directed the movie was fucking great.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. And I think for maybe for all of that alone, it just deserves a watch regardless. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of our overall thoughts on Her Private Hell. We've now seen what 4 films so far in the festival. Five films. Gosh, where are we?
Because we had a couple of screeners. So
correct. Yes. So we've been able to do that. We're gonna have other episodes coming your way. I think we're gonna smash a couple of them together into a twofer, partially because there's a couple that are like maybe a little less horror for a change, and we also have a couple that I'm gonna be seeing by myself. So we'll kind of like shoehorn those into a couple of episodes too, and do a little bit of like a double feature for you guys as well. But we're gonna have a lot more before the beginning of August.
A lot.
Yeah.
There's going to be like episodes dropping like almost every other day.
I don't think we're going to have a choice. So, hey, listen, if you want something to listen to, thank you very much for being here and stay tuned for that because we're coming your way.
Yeah.
Okay. As we mentioned, check out gravetonepod.com. We've got the whole section over there. Gravetone Pod everywhere on all socials, so you can follow all of our breakdowns of everything, and that way you'll know when we have a new episode coming out as well. Huzzah.
That's right.
But in the meantime, stay scared and stay tuned.
Ciao, guys.
See you tomorrow.